B-Pod Studios.
Tub. Belger.
I'm a liar and a phony. One of those no-good nicks you keep running away from.
Maz.
I'm a man, Bill. Nobody's perfect.
Belger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Jordan Binnington is very patient for a young goalie. He's got very active hands. I would say that he handles a puck maybe a little bit more than Tuukka, very adept at handling the puck. On Tuukka Rask right now, patient. At times he stood on his feet. He made saves on Justin Williams, glove saves in the slot, standing on his feet. Tuukka is maybe a little bit smoother, maybe a little bit more elegant in his movement.
Both great, though. If Tuukka plays the way Tuukka has been playing, I love St. Louis' story. I just don't see anybody beating him. If he plays that way, that's a real tough out.
It's Kevin Weeks and Mike Rupp on the NHL Network breaking down the goalie matchup. Who gets the check mark in net there, Maz?
Bruins.
That's a good place to start. Your handicap in the series.
Yeah, Bruins. And again, I want to see more of Binnington, but in the bits that I saw of that series between the Blues and the Sharks, Binnington does give up a soft goal here and there. I mean, you know, it's not... Tuukka's been airtight. I mean, he's been so damn good that, honestly, right now I'd give the Bruins the edge over anybody in goal with the way he's going. And I'm not telling you that Tuukka's invulnerable because he's had his moments over the years. But right now, based on where they are and what we know, the Bruins. Okay. Bruins get the edge there.
Fast, and I would agree. You have to. Yeah, because I think experience has to come into, you know, whether you think it's a small factor or a big factor, it's a factor. Even if it's 5%. 10%, 2%, whatever. It's 8% for to have been in this situation before. And that has to help Rask. And the fact that, you know, Binnington has his whole career in front of him, where Rask, this might be his last chance. He might be on one of these lists, one of the great players never to win a cup if he doesn't take advantage of this. So you just sort of have to give him the nod there. His numbers are also better. He's also put up better postseason numbers, as good as Binnington's been. Binnington was the best goalie in the regular season. But then again, it was just... you know, a little over half of a season. He didn't start playing. His first start, I think, was January 7th. But in the playoffs, Rask has a 1.84 goals against. Binnington has a 2.36. Rask has a 9.42 save percentage, which is just exceptional.
Otherworldly.
Binnington has a 9.14, which is also really good. But, you know, Rask has been a better postseason goalie. So Rask has played better. He has experience. And so he has to have the nod.
Just looking through some of their playoff games, there's a couple of games that Binnington gave up six goals in, including in this San Jose series, another one 5-4, you know. So he hasn't been as locked down as Rask has been in this postseason.
So I want to see more of him. I mean, he's good, but man, he's got some great defensemen in front of him. I mean, those guys are gigantic. The puck gets loose in front of the net, you can't get at it.
So Binnington's fascinating because he's just one of these guys, and this is the thing about goalies. It's obviously so important. It's like the most important position on the field. Obviously, one of the most important positions in sports is what I mean to say. I mean, it starts there. You handicap a hockey game starting in net like you handicap a baseball game starting with the starting pitcher.
No question.
I mean, it's that important. But you're just as likely to get a Stanley Cup guy from where you got Tuukka Rask. First round pick, hugely touted, hot prospect as a teenager, considered the best young goalie on the planet for much of his early life, like first round stud, can't miss prospect, third highest paid goalie in the league, Tuukka Rask pedigree from the time he was 18 on. Or you could be Jordan Binnington, who started the year in the minors, was actually going to be farmed out to the ECHL until he said no. And actually last year played for your minor league team and didn't get his first NHL start until January 7th.
Something like that.
He was the fourth guy in the Blues depth chart. When the season started, he was fourth. He was the fourth guy. Here are the teams that Jordan Binnington has played for. Ready? And this is just what's listed on his sheet, so I'm just going to do it.
Here we go. Cue the Pierre McGuire.
Right, thank you. The Vaughn Kings Minor Midget AAA. Toronto Dixie Beehives.
Yeah.
Now, some of these are OHL, some of these are AHL, some of these are... But again... the Toronto Dixie Beehives.
They call them the Party Bees.
The Owen Sound Attack. The Peoria Rivermen. The Chicago Wolves. The Kalamazoo Wings. The Providence Bruins and the San Antonio Rampage.
Little Atkinson is so smart out of Riverside, Connecticut, Boston College, Avon Old Farms, and Mid-Fairfield Blues before he got to the NHL.
Get ready for Pierre next week.
Avon
tell us about
Old Farms.
His time with the San Antonio Rampage and the Vaughn Kings minor midget AAA team. I want to
what's
shoot,
that minor
shoot
midget
myself
under the age
in the
16?
Head. Midgets is, I can't remember. Is that lower than Bantam? I can't remember how it went. Either way, and this guy, fourth guy on their depth chart, gets called up in January and is, you know, is one of the most valuable players in the league. And is a called, you know, so that and he makes $650,000.
And they've been looking for a goalie there forever.
Makes freaking. Your guy makes $7 million, third, fourth highest paid guy in the league. Big pedigree, first round pick, you know, labeled for the NHL from the time he was probably 16 years old, stud. This guy, although he was a third round pick, Binnington was in 2012, and he was a really good junior goalie. He played in the World Juniors, so, you know, he was a legit prospect. He's just 7 years into his career and just shows up in January, and now all of a sudden he's what, Grant Fuhr and Dominic Hasek? And that's the thing about paying the goalie and spending a first round pick on the goalie. It's sort of like the NFL running back or the major league closer.
Sure.
Which is, you got to have it. It's so damn important, but really they come from anywhere. They really come from all over the place.
Yeah, it can come out of the woodwork.
And you don't need to pay for them necessarily because it really is. There's a Jordan Binnington waiting to fall into your lap as likely as it is to draft a guy in the first round and pay him $7 million.
So, look, he's been good there. And again, as Murray has pointed out on numerous occasions, I think that is, you know, that's the moment their season started to turn. Although, you know, there's a Berube factor in there too, the coach firing, right? So, you know, that's an element too. I still want to see how good he really is because – there are some goals in there that you see in some of these games that are not great goals. And I just wonder how much his D really helps him out. Because any rebound, any loose puck in front of that net, you can't get at it. I mean, their D is awesome in front of the net.
Meanwhile, here's my question on Rask. What do you think's been the difference this year? Why now? Feels like he's had a little bit of a breakthrough. I feel like he's better now than he was in 13. I do. The numbers are comparable. That, you know, the stat sheet wouldn't tell you that. But I think that, I know that. This is a fact. He's put together three really solid rounds. In 2013, when he got to this spot, that first round against Toronto, he wasn't great. He wasn't. He was good against New York in the next one and out of his mind against the Penguins. But that was a more up and down run. And then he got to the finals and didn't finish the deal. But in that 2013 run, his first round against Toronto was not too snappy. This one, he was really good against Toronto, got better against Columbus. And so I think he's better here. I think he's had a breakthrough. It feels that way. What's the difference? Why? Why now?
So I can tell you, first of all, I don't think it's any one thing, but if you're asking me what I think the biggest element is, I think that Cassidy's kept him on edge.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of three things. He got goosed by Halak, him bringing him in, which is by proxy through Cassidy. I think it's less workload because of that. And the other thing, I think he might have found himself when he had that leave of absence, you know, for lack of a better term. Almost kind of like what happened with David Price when he was out in the Zen Garden in Houston. Something just clicked.
So, yeah, it might be that. I mean, again, I think all of those things are factors. I think the big thing is they kept him on edge a little bit.
The coach holds him accountable more than anyone else has here, I think, in a while. Cassidy pushes him. I think the rest provided by Halak was huge. We've seen that with Rask over the years. The more rest, the better. It's just age, 32.
It's a factor.
10 years, whatever, in the league. And just sort of finally.
Yeah, he's matured.
Finally matured and has figured it out. Could it be that leave of absence?
Sure.
Did he clear his head or, you know, and you look at his numbers, his save percentage went up 15 points. He was a 4-4 goalie with a 9-something. I had it in front of me and now I lost it. But
because Vinny sent it to us.
Yes, his number, I'm sorry, he had a 901 save percentage. 901 save percentage when he went away. 4-4 record. 500 goalie, 901 save percentage. He had pretty much lost his job. I mean, there was a time there where Halak took over and was the guy. Then he comes back from the leave. 23-9-5, 915 save percentage. So it is something of a turning point there. What happened there? Yeah, so, I mean, still no one knows, right?
Yeah, again, I think there are a lot of variables there. I think the big one, and I said that they kept him on edge, you really can attribute it to Halak. Halak served two purposes here. One, he gave him rest, and not necessarily in this order, by the way. One, he gave him rest, and two, and maybe more importantly, he threatened him. Nobody else was ever really a threat.
And you say he being Halak, but Cassidy's part and parcel.
Right.
How many times going to the playoffs do we hear Cassidy say, we have two goalies with playoff experience. We have two goalies with playoff experience. We have two goalies with playoff experience. You know, the thing that Cassidy did in the regular season, he carried into that first round against Toronto. And if Rask wasn't right, he was going to make a move.
Yeah. So, the biggest thing to me, the presence of Halak. And again, you can say that affected him in multiple ways, and I think you'd be right. The Bruins used Halak to leverage Tuca. It worked. Halak gave Tuca rest. It appears to have worked. The presence of Halak on all levels, to me, is the biggest factor.
Okay, so those are items. Who do you like in this series? Who do you like in this series? I like the Bruins. I really do. They should win this thing. They should really win this. I mean, do you want games? I don't know. It should. I don't even think it should go seven. I don't. I think the Bruins, I think St. Louis is that classic Cinderella team that gets to this level, and that's when the bubble finally bursts. And I've seen it over and over through the years in hockey. Cinderella gets to this point, and then they meet a team that's just a little more legit, a little more established, and that's it. That happened last year with Ovechkin and the Capitals. It's happened through the years. I've seen it over and over again. I think St. Louis is that classic team, and that's it. And so it should be the Bruins. But that's just sort of a intangible thing. We'll start with in net. I think they have the edge in net. I think that St. Louis's style is more conducive to the Bruins. The teams that scare me are the explosive teams. I don't think St. Louis is explosive enough. I think you're better on special teams. And I think you've been playing better. You're playing better than the Blues. So I like the Bruins in this series. We revisit the Joe Thornton trade and the goalie stuff. Your calls on all of it right after this.
You're listening to Felger and Bass on 98.5. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Something?
I don't know. Google it, Maz.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
That's idiotic.
Now back to Felger and Maz on Boston's home for sports.
Bruce, how do you deal with a hot goaltender during this break? Like, is nobody talking to Tuca right now?
No, I just saw him in there. Berge's chatting with him over breakfast, to be honest with you, so that's a bad rumor.
That was, again, Cassie on this morning with TNR, full interview. On 98.5thesportshub.com, if you want it, as promised, back to your phones. John in the car, comment line says hockey. Bring it to me, John. Go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Here's my take on it. I have St. Louis in six or seven games, okay? The layoff is going to kill the momentum with Tuukka Rask. That's like the worst thing that could have happened to him. And also, St. Louis is much more battle-tested. If you look at the past champions, I know the 2 years the Penguins won the Cup, they played a seventh game in the conference championship and double overtime against Winnipeg and seven against Tampa. And I don't think it helps you at all to not only have a lackluster competition in Carolina and Columbus, but also then to have 11 days off when you started to really play well. And also, I think their defense, they're going to lay the wood on Marchand and Pasternak. They are physically going to knock the snot out of them. And as the game goes on with that physical defense, when you start getting into game five and six and seven, that's where you're going to see a difference. You're right, Mike, they are more explosive, but they're not going to be on the power play, Boston, as much.
Okay, John, I'm just going to stop you there. It's fair analysis, all of it. All of it. The break killing the momentum of Rask and the Bruins.
Not any more than the break is going to kill St. Louis now. I mean, they get 5 days off, and I know there's a difference between 5 and 11, but at some point, the break's long enough to disrupt you. And if it were 5 days between rounds 2 and 3, we would say, well, that's a long layoff. So it is a long layoff. 5 days is a long layoff. I think that it gets mitigated some by what St. Louis is now going to go through. So is Rask going to be as sharp? I don't know. I mean, I think it's fair to ask that question. I would also ask it of Binnington. Like, I wouldn't just stop at Rask.
And again, who is more... Well, who is the experience factor to mitigate it? And I'm just looking this up now, and I'm surprised we haven't looked it up sooner. The Bruins swept the Penguins in 2013 and then played in the finals. That must have been a pretty good gap right there itself.
Sure, you would think.
I'm going to you know, if you could talk here for a second, I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, I just think that, like, his whole point is that the Bruins have a long layoff. Well, St. Louis is now going to have 5 days off. Bennington's rhythm is going to get disrupted, too. They're not going to practice every day until next Monday. Immediately, they're going to get some break and sort of, you know, recharge and get ready for the finals. That's what they're going to do. It's going to be the same thing.
It was only a five-day break in 2013 because the Blackhawks won in five. You won in four. They won in five. And so your last game against Pittsburgh was on June 7th. The finals began June 12th with that wretched triple overtime game in Chicago.
I remember it well.
Okay, so that's not quite a visit gap, but still, Rask has, so there's 5 days and 5 days. So Rask has, you know, been down here-ish where Bennington has not.
Right.
And that's got to be, I think that's in your advantage. But the, you know what the caller said? That all could play out. That those huge defensemen in St. Louis could wear you down.
No
that,
question.
It's an absolute, that's an absolute factor. Battle-tested? More recently, for sure. I mean, St. Louis had to overcome more in their conference final than you did. You know, to me, what you got through in the first two rounds is as battle-tested as you need to be. Not that it was the highest end of competition in the league, but those were battles. Those were wars, the first two series. So battle-tested, I think, to me, is a wash. Scott in St. Louis says he's a Bruins fan. Go ahead, Scott.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. Yeah, from Boston a long time ago, but in St. Louis 7 years. The gentleman before kind of hit on it. I think if St. Louis can steal one in Boston, then you're looking at a seven-game series. I think the Bruins will win it. But Bennington, this kid is, he's got ice in his veins, and Mavs hit on it. It's going to be a grind. You're looking at a lot of 2-1, 3-2 games. I just think that defense is going to slow the bees down, and it's just going to be a war. It should be a great, entertaining series, and this city here is really pumped, so it kind of puts me in a hard spot because I've lived here for 7 years and really love hockey on both sides, but it's going to be a great series. And
okay, well, we'll see. St. Louis, really good road team. Who was it, Alex? Was you that gave me the number? Who is the number for St. Louis on the road this year? They've been exceptional. I don't have the record. I can't find it.
The Bruins have been good on the road in the postseason, too,
though. Bruins, very good road team. Two good road teams. I think they're both battle-tested. It's hard to get to this stage in the Stanley Cup playoffs and say you aren't battle-tested. This isn't like the NFL where you get a bye, then a tomato can, and then a home game in a conference final. I mean, I think there are some NFL teams that get to the Super Bowl and are not battle-tested. I think just the nature of those playoffs. The NHL, 4x7. By the time you get here, you're battle-tested.
Yeah, and again, you have to demonstrate some level of resiliency, too. Like you made the point earlier, that whole hand pass game. St. Louis won the next three.
12-2 since they've outscored their opponents 12-2 since then.
I mean, they didn't bat an eye. They just got right back on the ice and started knocking the Sharks through the boards. And I would say the same of the Bruins, by the way, along the way in the Columbus series. The puck goes up into the netting, right? Takes the air out of the balloon a little bit. They won the game. McAvoy goes down. They won the game. Like, they just don't get deterred. And I think that... I just think that that's what this thing's going to be. Two teams slamming heads into one another for seven games. I think that's what you're getting.
Eddie and Revere, thanks for holding on. Eddie, what do you got?
Yeah, I was thinking that David Backes is seems to be, to me anyway, a key or a clutch player in this whole scenario, especially seeing as how he was from St. Louis.
So, Eddie, I think he's a sidebar, meaning I don't think he's a big factor at all. I don't. He's a third line player who's going to get 9 minutes a night. And, you know, win one for David is going to be down the list. They need to win one for Rask.
It's a good matchup for him, though.
I think it's his kind of game. That's what I'm talking about. Right. If you were playing San Jose with a faster, more explosive sort of team, I would fear for Backes out there. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Why I like the style of the matchup. It allows Backes to play. Really?
I mean, he'll go to the front of the net and knock heads with those guys.
You bet he will.
Like, he'll do that.
Happily.
So in that way, and look, there's going to be a little extra, jump in his veins for facing his old team.
Oh, like, sure.
So they might get something a little out of him in this series.
There's just two stories that I have no use for, zero. And you know what the first is. The first is...
Bobby Orr's goal in 70.
That can kiss the inside of my ass.
Yep, or the outside.
Boring. Boring. Useless. This is the Blues' first finals appearance since 1970. It's really their first ever, because the first three don't count, as I've explained to you a million times over. There was a expansion division. So the first, I don't even consider those finals appearances by St. Louis real finals appearances. Fake. Asterisk. It's the first time they've ever made the finals. First time since they played you in 70. Oh, I don't care. Please call Steve Buckley or Shaughnessy with that one.
Yeah, let me just get this off my chest. I am going to predict a feature from Stan Grossfeld on Noel Picard.
Here it comes.
The defenseman who is Noel Picard even alive?
Call Ken Burns or Stan Grossfeld for that one. And the second one is David Backus going back home. I don't care. I do not care. Non-factor, by the way.
Noel Picard died 2 years ago, man. Oh,
that's so unfortunate.
Well, that story.
You've already given me more than I want to hear. But David Backus going back there? Yes, he's going to have some extra money. Does it matter to him if he were playing? David Backus, who's been in the league now how long? 15 years? I don't know. I just, you know, something like that. He's been in the league two decades or whatever. Do you think it matters to him at this stage whether he's playing the St. Louis Blues or the Toronto Dixie Beehives?
No.
He needs a cup. He's one of these guys that needs a cup, and he's done.
So I'll tell you, okay.
This might be his last year. So the thing about going against St. Louis versus winning a cup is miles apart.
Agreed.
I mean, the cup is there, and then it's a nice little sidebar that it's St. Louis. I don't want to hear it. You have to call someone else to talk about Backus going back to St. Louis.
It's not a big story, but if they were to win it in St. Louis and he gets to carry the cup in that arena, that'd be pretty cool.
Nate, it'd be about the 10th thing that I'd want to see. I'd rather see Chara lifted up. I'd rather see Rask lifted
up.
I'd rather see all sorts of different things. And then we'll get to Backus on day five and in the last hour of the show. Pete in Delaware. Hi, Pete.
Hey, guys. How are you today? Hey, two things. First off, I think we definitely have our answer on Thornton now. I mean, like Maz was just saying, they're up 2-1. Could be the guy's last chance at this. And his team folded like an accordion. There was nothing there. There was no one fighting for him to get to the cup. He wasn't fighting, no leadership, nothing. It kind of pretty much summed up his whole career and where he's at. And secondly, hey, Mike, at 9:09 on SportsCenter this morning, Bobby Orr was flying through the air.
Of course he is. It's the thing everyone's going to do. Bobby Orr in 70. I've mocked it for two straight days. I don't need to continue. You can do that on your own time. Do that somewhere else. Tyler in Springfield. Hi, Tyler.
Hey, so earlier this year said that Donato would have been your big come-out player, swing and a miss, whatever. But guy they got for him, Charlie Coyle, has had a good postseason. My question to you guys is, who do you think is going to be the big seventh man, sixth man who has to step up? I think it's got to be Krejci. And what's Tuukka's leash in this postseries? He's been good, but if he starts slipping, when do you think about putting in Rask?
Oh, I love the Tuukka leash.
People still nervous about
the,
this guy.
The Tuukka leash is back on the table.
Wow.
Do we have a Tuukka leash in this series? Oh, I love it. I mean, I think that's crazy. But is there a leash?
He'd have to be really bad in the first two games for it to happen.
So, to me, it's interesting how they match up. You know, what's technically the second line in St. Louis? Is it Ryan O'Reilly?
Yes.
Okay. Again, O'Reilly and Bergeron have typically gone head-to-head. When he was in Buffalo, that was the matchup. It was a good matchup, and O'Reilly held his own. So does that mean Krejci gets Braden Schenn and Jaden Schwartz and Vladimir Tarasenko?
Maybe.
I mean, there's going to be some room for Krejci there, but are the Bruins comfortable with that?
I don't know.
I mean, don't they want their defensive players out there?
Probably.
Would you want the Coyle line out there? Or like Cassie loves throwing his fourth line out there against the scoring line of the other team.
So apparently Berube does something similar with his fourth line too. He'll use them the same way that Cassidy does. So I don't know about the matchups in terms of like, you know, how much Berube will play matchups, right?
So who's that X factor? I'll just give him an answer. I've said it from day one. I've been on this guy from day one, Marcus Johansson. I just think he gets third line matchups, and that's sort of why I started to look at sort of the matchup.
Sure.
And, you know, who's he going to be playing against, a checking line or their third line? And if it's against their third line, I think he's got more skill than that, and I think you saw it in the last couple rounds, and I like that player.
Okay, and if you were San Jose, how would you mitigate that?
I wouldn't worry about Marcus Johansson. I have to worry about Bergeron and Krejci and Pasternak and all those other guys. That's why Johansson has room.
Yeah, I'd knock Johansson through the boards is what I would do.
And you mean St. Louis, not San Jose.
Thank you. I keep saying San Jose?
We all do.
Desperately wanted that to get ready for the Midwest, boys.
You know just goes to show you.
Oh, no. Now we get to get barbecue, Maz, because Lord knows we can't get that anywhere else.
I know. This is me, you know, claiming that Sony Michel's going to get knocked out of a playoff game again. But I could see Johansson not making it through this series.
I think he's going to get good matchups.
I just think it's that kind of, they're going to hit the crap out of him. They are going to hit the ever-loving crap out of him.
anyway on the simulcast if anyone wants to play with the are you happy now, Murray, that you're getting like, Lord knows you can't get barbecue sauce in the Bay Area.
We're going to go to the Arch. We're going to Maz.
I'm not going to the Arch.
They have the scooters.
I'm not doing the scooters. Yep.
Yeah, it's not the Arch. It's the Arch.
I'm going to have that barbecue.
It's like when someone punches you, you say, Arch.
Felger and Maz will be in St. Louis for that weekend. Games 3 and 4, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Long stint. You headed out there. We'll hopefully have a place for you to come see us and all that stuff. So if you're heading out there, Felger and Maz will be there.
And on this trip, it might be Super Sunday.
Here comes a update from Murray. When we come back, take a little Bruins breather, just a quick 5-minute breather on some NBA stuff. So don't go in.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Maz.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
What you're saying is that this has not been decided. There's no hidden handshake agreement.
No.
With the New York Knicks?
No.
No, nothing like that?
No.
Okay. All right.
That is 100% undecided. And I'm waiting on Kevin, you know? That's the truth. I think there's a feeling that this thing is like war games and everybody's kind of like...
playing a role.
Yeah, playing chess like years out. But when somebody gets to the level of basketball that he's at, you can't juggle focus like that. There's so many things he's juggling too. He's not scripting his future while he's playing the way he plays and practices the way he practices. And it's, I think it's frustrating, honestly, at times. But I get it. I do get it. I get that, like, even as a kid, the kind of soap opera of it all was just beginning. And I liked it. Now, I think in some ways, it's like more soap opera at times than basketball. But he really doesn't know, and I really don't know.
Quick hockey breather. It's Rich Kleeman, the manager for Kevin Durant, 100% undecided. Do you agree with that, Maz? Do you believe that?
No. No, not for a second do I believe that it's 100% undecided. I think that...
Is it more likely to be 100% decided or 100% undecided?
100% decided.
Agreed.
Now, look, if you want to tell me it's not 100%, he's at 90, 95, and, you know, there's always the chance that something pops up that nobody expected. You know, sure, because I don't think anything's 100% until all the names are on the contracts. So, fine. But I think that his people have been planning this for over a year, that, you know, they know where he's going to go, what he's going to get, what the setup is going to be. And the money, again, is incidental because a lot of that is pre-programmed. But when I say what he's going to get, I mean, like, any, you know, sort of perks or, you know, is he going to have an office in the arena? Like, all of that.
Exactly.
All of that crap, they already know. They already know. They absolutely know.
Okay. We brought this up yesterday, and I just think for Durant's legacy, if he wants to be considered among the group of players that he wants to be considered with, Jordan, LeBron, the all-timers, he has got to get out of Golden State, and he's got to win somewhere else. Has to. Or else, I am sorry. Unless you're an NBA Bobo, you look at him and you say, you parachuted into a championship like no one I've ever seen before, and he did. And he did. I mean, and it's just being proven now how well the team is playing without him and how they're going to win a championship without him. And that sort of leads to the next thing. He's got an injury, whether it's really a calf or an Achilles or something. Well, Kleeman weighed in on his health and his chances of coming back. Jimmy, have that second cut?
How's his health?
His health is good. He's
going to see him in the finals, do you believe?
Do I believe? I don't know. I honestly hope so.
Yeah.
I honestly hope so. But again, like, when you have an injury that's real, and it's a real injury, for him, like, he's got to be Kevin Durant. So he's got about the highest pain threshold of someone I know. So when he misses time, it's because the injury is real. It's a real injury. And I hope that we can see him next week or 2 weeks from now.
My guess is he's done.
I think so, too. Yeah.
My guess is he's done.
Feels that way.
Yeah, we haven't heard any, you know, speculation from any NBA talking heads that are plugged in. Well, but just, like, he's going to be coming back anytime soon.
This guy was, if Durant was an option to come back, I think this guy would say, yeah, you'll see him.
Yeah.
You know, says, I don't know.
I mean, I also think that if you're talking about like a muscle pull, right? A calf, a hamstring, it's a 6-week injury.
Do you think he needs to come back and claim part of this championship?
Keep him off Twitter, which he's been on like for the last 48 hours chirping at other reporters.
Well, so this is what I mean. It's like if they win it without him, never mind.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Maz's Curry take. But if they win it without him this year, and now it's now the Golden State Warriors have won two championships without him, they didn't need the guy.
No, they never really did.
And the numbers are resounding in terms of how they play with him versus without him. The numbers tell you they are much better without him. Much better. Win, loss, all these things. And we've got people who've been sent us all this stuff. And I can give you some of it. Over the last 3 years, Durant Curry era, Golden State's win percentage. When Curry is in the lineup and Durant is out, Golden State has a winning percentage of over 90%, 34-4. Comparatively, when Durant is in the lineup and Curry is out, the winning percentage drops to 61%, 24-18, a nearly 30% swing in winning percentage. And there's more numbers like this if you want them. The numbers show they've been much better without Durant than with him. But I think we can parse those and, you know, throw some of those out like you throw some out with Kyrie. I look at what you do in the postseason. And if they win their second championship without Kevin Durant, it proves he was just a superfluous piece that parachuted in to hang on to these guys, and they did not need him.
He's all about the margin of victory. That's what he is.
Precisely. Right. Four games or six.
I mean, they won in six without him, albeit against a Cleveland team that didn't have Kyrie. But nonetheless, they won in six without him. In the 2 years they've had him, they've won in five and swept.
So if he's concerned about his legacy, I think he wants to rush back and claim part of this championship. Because I think it looks really bad if they win without him in the fashion that they're doing.
I'm just why do you both immediately discount the Clippers thing?
I don't
discount the Clippers. Oh, okay.
I mean, I think he's going to the Knicks. I just think that's...
Because it's still L.A. I mean, it's obviously not the marquee franchise, but behind the scenes, or at least with Doc Rivers in terms of the coach and all that stuff, I think they're better for him than the Knicks would be, especially with that nut owner.
Okay, but again, you're talking about the basketball.
And I think that's important to Rick.
Yeah, I know, but the only thing is, but see, that whole boardroom thing, like, I'm not sure that, I think all the decisions are being made about stuff other than basketball. And does he want to be in the same market as LeBron or be in the other coast?
I mean, I still think there's the sexiness factor of being in Los Angeles. If he wants to still market himself, you're obviously able to do that in L.A. as well as you are in New York.
So I just think that I wouldn't rule out the Clippers. I don't think it's a zero. And I think Doc has some allure there, too. But really, it's about L.A. But I think if he can be in New York alone versus L.A. and share the market with LeBron, he'll choose New York.
And I agree with that. The one thing I would give to the Clippers is the owner. I think Steve Ballmer.
Oh, he's the NBA's richest owner. He's not a nut like James Dolan. I think Jerry West running the show there.
The ownership and the structure is better with the Clippers. I don't know if Durant cares about that or not, but the Clippers are not a bleep show. They actually seem like a fairly functional operation with a real committed, deep-pocketed nut of an owner, but not like a bad nut like Dolan. So anyway, there's your little basketball breather on Durant. I think legacy-wise, he's got to go somewhere else and win. And even this year, he's got to hurry back and claim part of this title because he looks like a bigger ring chaser than ever if they win their second without him. And it's proven they do not need him. Long commercial-free segment is next.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's Felger.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
If you talk and you're thinking about a young goalie in this kind of situation, how does that time off, do you think, affect them?
Well, I don't know the answer, to be honest with you. I wish I could tell you that they're going to come out. I'll tell you this. What happened with, and here's just a little bit of what I think could happen, is Columbus, you know, they win their first playoff series ever. They have a lot of time off, right? They beat Tampa, so they're sitting around for a week in Columbus. Everyone's telling them how great they are, and, you know, they come out, and, you know, they were fine coming out of the gate. I think they were sloppy in the first period, and they were okay, but
we end up getting the best of them. And Carolina, the same, right? They sweep, and now it's like, geez, the team hasn't been this far, so the town's excited. And, you know, all of a sudden, they, you know, they're going to find their game in the second period. So I really believe that teams can find it fairly quickly. I think St. Louis will go through the same thing. They're going to be reading about how good they are for the next 5-6 days and back to the Stanley Cup. The last time they were there was against us, ironically. So, but I believe they'll find their game. I mean, teams are playing well this time of year, so they've got enough leadership over there that eventually you're going to find it, and usually sooner rather than later. So it's like us. I really don't believe it's going to take us long. We're going to lose a few puck battles early just because you're not used to battling, and then we're, you know, you're going to get knocked on your ass, and all of a sudden you're back into it. So that's usually the way it works.
It's Bruce Cassidy on the layoffs and how that affects each team and Binnington and all of that. I think he raises something, maybe unintentionally there, about the intangible, about being able to handle the moment. I think he makes a great point, whether he meant to or not. And maybe he meant to say it, but didn't want to go all the way there. But when you talk about teams that are just happy to be there, the Bruins cannot just be happy to be here. It's a, this is going to be the last chance for a cup for some Hall of Fame players. And that's it. And there's a goaltender here who needs it for his legacy and his standing, desperately. And if the Bruins lose, no one here is satisfied that they made this level. This is not, we will rip them apart if they lose this round. We will. They have no business losing to this team. So there's, it's not like the Bruins are sitting here reading their press clippings because everyone's fat and happy. All these other teams, when you face Columbus in the second round, you know that was the first time they had ever gotten out of the first round?
Correct.
And remember the questions to John Tortorella about that? He said, "Would you cut it out with that crap? I don't want to hear about that." And but they, you know, there was a certain level of satisfaction there that Columbus finally won a series. You got to Carolina. I mean, come on. That team
came out of nowhere.
Had no business being even there, and they were just thrilled to be in a conference final with a chance to go to the cup. They come off a sweep. They read their press clippings. I can see that happening there. St. Louis? This is the first time they've been in the finals since the play that shall not be mentioned. Almost half a freaking century. You think there's, I mean, would you blame him if you're just satisfied to be here? Like, so that whole thing, I think, does play to the Bruins' favor.
Sure.
No one's satisfied being here around here. And whether Cassie meant to go there or not, I think he did.
Look, and again, you've got Bruins veterans who've been to the Cup twice. They won one and lost one, right? And the last one was a loss.
The loss helps in this circumstance.
So I think they
don't
get,
you think?
Yes, I do, because I think they get here again and they say, well, look, we got here before and we lost. I don't want that again. Like, it doesn't do us any good to get here and lose.
Joe in Pittsfield, back to your phones, as promised. Well, go ahead, Joe, what do you got?
I think it's going to be, Mike, I think it's going to be a hard-fought game. It comes down to goaltending. I think Tuca's going to do the job. I think the Bruins are a little bit better than this team, and I honestly believe they didn't have a tough time against San Jose because that goaltender was like Swiss cheese. But I think the Bruins are really going to be have their heads on straight and really want to win this Stanley Cup.
Of course they want to win it. Everyone wants to win it, Joe. That's not a factor. You got to give the – who is the edge of net?
Bruins.
They just do. And that's – I don't know. That's a good place to start. That's a good place to start. And I'm not overlooking Binnington. I think he's legit. And I think just because he's a rookie and just because he played for the Toronto Dixie Beehives, that doesn't – you know, when you faced the Washington Capitals in 2012, the year after you won the Cup, they brought in this young goalie from the minors named Braden Holtby. You're like, who's this bum? You're going to beat these guys, Holtby versus Tim Thomas. This is a no-brainer.
Toronto Dixie Beehives, is that what the name of the team is?
Yeah. And so, but did it matter that Holtby had no experience? No. So Binnington could be that guy. I'm just saying I think, well, Rask is playing better.
Well, look, again, you can only evaluate that based on where we are at the moment. And the fact is that right now, the Bruins have the best goalie in the playoffs. I would give them the edge right now no matter who they're playing. And the fact is that Bobrovsky played his ass off in the first half of that series against the Bruins, and then it completely flipped, and Tuca kicked his ass in the last three. And since that time, they've had the best goalie in the playoffs. I mean, I don't think anybody's playing better than him right now.
Okay, we were talking about Joe Thornton earlier and another fail, and will he go down as the best player in hockey to never have won a Stanley Cup? And we said, who's on that list? And we've been batting around some names, so a lot of people want to help us with that. Be quick. David Blackstone, who's on that list for you?
Patrick Marleau, his running buddy for so long, so many years.
Patrick Marleau, that's another good one. How about Martin on the Cape? Go ethead, Martin.
I don't think Thornton can dethrone Marcel Dion for most talented winner of nothing career trophy. Thornton at least went to the finals, Mike, and they had some talent nearby. And the great talent of Marcel Dion played forever for the old stinko purple and gold L.A. Kings with no talent near him and never got a sniff at the cup.
Marcel Dion, yeah, Martin, a lot of people have scolded us, like that's number one with a bullet. I think there's another name on the list that we missed that I want to see if people come up with. Mike in Nashville. Go ahead, Mike. Okay, Brad Park, that phone is wretched. Brad Park.
Good one.
Put him on the list.
But again, defenseman. Like, I think it's harder for a defenseman in a lot of ways.
Joe Thornton or Brad Park?
Thornton.
Okay, agreed. Monte in Framingham. Go ahead, Monte.
Adam Oates, Rick Middleton, Cam Neely. Brad Park was one of my guys, too, and Marcel Dion.
Okay, we're all missing one.
Funny how he just rattled off Bruins.
I know, right?
Pat LaFontaine?
No.
Good one. No, sure.
No, but he's not the guy we're thinking of.
Oh.
Jerome Iginla.
Yeah, Iginla's a good one.
He sucks.
Iginla's the modern, no. He was a great NHL player.
I mean, he played 20 years, 1,200 games, almost 1,100 points, you know, multiple-time All-Star. He was a stud. Never won it.
Okay, I mean, again, that sucked when he got here. That was one of the great players of his generation. Again, that was a great player and never won the cup. But I'll tell you what.
And did get to the finals one year, right?
And I consider Jerome Iginla a winner. Did Jerome Iginla's ex-GM ever come out and say we were never going to win with that guy?
No.
No.
Like Mike O'Connell did with Joe Thornton? Is Jerome Iginla or Marcel Dion or any of these other guys? Did their manager ever come out? Do you have that cut right there, Jimmy? You have it ready to roll again, just for emphasis?
And that, just quickly on Dion, his teams sucked. They were bad teams. The Kings were bad for a lot of years. So, like, I mean, that's one where I say, okay, like, there's a mitigating factor there. Did he ever have the supporting cast?
Jerome Iginla, Marcel Dion, Brad Park, Rick Middleton, Eric Lindros, Pat LaFontaine, name the guy. Did any of those guys, ex-general manager, ever come out and say something like this?
It is satisfying to me. You know, it really is. I'd be lying if I didn't say it, that the Bruins won it before San Jose. You know, that was a controversial trade. We knew that it was going to cause a lot of waves. And, you know, eventually it probably cost you my job. But so it is, you know, and I don't think, you know, and you might differ with me, I don't think the Bruins would have won the Stanley Cup if they had Joe Thornton on this team.
Okay, again, that was Mike O'Connell to us.
What a shot!
8 years old, but what the hell, we keep playing because Joe's out again. So that's one of the items on the table. We'll reset our thoughts on the series. We're after Murray's 90-second update, no commercial.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.